Welcome to the Daily Canon Podcast. Here to talk all things Arsenal is your host, Matthew Wade.
So hello again, listeners, and welcome to another slightly belated Daily Canon Weekly podcast. As some of you that follow on Twitter might know, the podcast has had its own COVID postponement and suspensions, along with the football in the last month. Basically, my little one got it, and so we couldn't leave the house for a period of time because he just didn't get over it as quickly as one might hope. Nothing too serious, and he's all fine now, bar being the snottiest tiny child this side of London. But joining me to talk about, well, the things that did happen and the things that probably should have happened but didn't, is Paul Williams. How are you, Paul?
Not too bad. I've got an announcement to make. This is going to be my last ever Daily Canon podcast because I've just accepted a contract offer to go and play up front for the Arsenal. So I'm recording for training on Monday.
Is it through conflict of interest?
Yes.
I don't know. I'm not sure anyone from the club listens to this. It would be all right.
Yes, well,
I mean, we could, if we wanted to really dig up the graves of things we didn't talk about before, we could waste time talking about a nil-nil against Burnley. The main learning point, I think, was, oh, we need a striker. That hasn't changed. Did you want to say anything about that?
Well, I was at that game, and I think... quite early on in the first half, I realised that Arsenal's tactic for the day was to get the ball wide and put high crosses into the box onto Ben Mee's head, which he would then head away, and he'd just repeat that process for the next hour, expecting things to be differently. But I enjoyed the experience of being at the game. It was just on the I went with a few friends and it was like, oh, that was a very good one. Because it wasn't. Well, it was just a slightly tired performance, and I think one of those ones where if you had an alternative on the bench, just something to tip the balance in your favour, that probably would have been the difference, but we didn't, and we don't. And like you said, it's 2 weeks ago, and that's probably best not as well.
Yeah, I mean, as you said, the main conclusion drawn from that game is that the squad's a bit threadbare, and it was a bit of a bridge too far for a group of players that had played a lot without a rest in the month of January, and basically half the team looked knackered. Burnley, the one thing that Burnley are great at is clogging up the centre of the pitch, funneling you out wide, and then headering it away. We still made enough chances to win the game, but not enough clear chances to romp home. But of course, against Burnley, the first goal is always key. You know, they may be rooted near the foot of the table, but they are a team that doesn't concede many goals. So very disappointing, but I mean, I wasn't particularly surprised before the game. I was thinking, can we just squeak a 1-0 or maybe a 2-0 if we get an early goal? Because we all saw the League Cup game against Liverpool where the team were dead on their feet. Which ultimately cost that semi-final because we couldn't obviously postpone a game to a time that suited us. We had to we'll probably get the games we did manage to postpone times that really don't suit us later in the season, but we'll see how that goes. Ultimately, we came out of that fixture knowing what we'd already known in January and has been confirmed subsequently that, we could really do with a centre-forward, maybe a centre-forward that is... able to both be involved in build-up and provide a goal threat. You know, the wonderful striker unicorn we've known the club have needed for some time now. And, I mean, before we sort of get into departures and the transfer window as a whole, you know, it does seem that there was some smoke indicating at least an attempt at fire with Vlahovic. And one has to say he very much fits a prototype of a striker that could do very, very well at this club. His combination of physical attributes, ability to drop deep and get involved in play, although he's not done that as much this season for Fiorentina. And of course, his finishing are things that would be very, very attractive and possibly transformative for this club. But he wanted to go to Juventus, and his agents probably manipulated the situation to their advantage. Seems as though everyone at Fiorentina is fucking livid about it. Because obviously Fiorentina have a historical thing of really not wanting to sell anyone to Juventus. And still, every time they get a potentially world-class player, they end up going to Juventus, despite the fact that fans or the club want that to happen. But Fiorentina do not have the financial clout to be able to take a hit on players running down their contracts. And that's just the reality of the situation. All we can say is good luck. Good luck in Turin, Dusan. Hopefully it goes to shit for you, and then we can pick you up on a very cheap deal a couple of years later a la Thierry. The transfer window, I suppose we'd better talk about the departures first and where that leaves us, given there haven't been any arrivals. Where do you stand on the players that have left? It's obviously a risk, but do you think it's a risk too much? Do you think it's a foolish approach from the club, or are you relatively happy with the business they've done?
I think there's, as usual, I think there's probably two ways of looking at it. I think that on one hand, you can say that the players that we have shipped out, including Mr. Aubameyang, clearly weren't going to be used very often, if at all, for the rest of the season, or at least Mikel Arteta was not planning to use them, and therefore getting their wages off the books, particularly with Aubameyang, might save Arsenal a bit of money that they can then spend in the summer, should the right targets emerge. I have to say, I think I went through the seven stages of grief at the end of the window very, very quickly. I went up a few times the night the window shut, just kind of thinking, we've really not signed anyone. Just been on social, funny enough, social media actually helped. I think there was just a few people that were like, well, actually, if the right targets weren't available for Arsenal to go and sign at a price Arsenal wanted to pay, then spending over the odds for players that we might not want in a year and a half, 2 years' time is kind of what's brought us to this position in the first place.
Yeah.
So I do have, and I think I am actually kind of that view myself. The problem is that you can't really judge it right now, because ultimately we are in a position where, yes, top four might be a stretch, but top four is obviously a lot more attainable than we felt it was going to be at the start of the season. And I think if we miss out on top four because, for example, we let someone who scores a lot of goals go on a free transfer to Barcelona, then there are going to be, I wonder how many people will be able to take a longer view of that in the summer. And I include myself in that, to be honest. I might well turn around in 4 months and say, well, actually, I think we went a little bit too far. And I think I was listening to Wrighty's House yesterday, and just listening to him talk about his sadness, and I may be skipping ahead of where you wanted to be, but just listening to Wright talking about Aubameyang going and his sadness at it, I think the two of them were very close in Aubameyang's fighting with Arsenal. Of course, Wright, he did the big interview with him on the pitch after the contract was signed last year, and that all in 2020, rather. And it was
all lost a year, so.
18 months ago, I mean, how did we get to this, and what really, really, really could it not be resolved? And ultimately, right, he said, we don't know what's happened. We kind of have to back the manager. I'm a little bit uneasy with the way Arteta seems to just fall out with players and that's it. But equally, you know, I think we all understand he's trying to build a culture at Arsenal. And I think maybe a bit like George Graham in 1986, there were players that just weren't going to fit in with that, and they have to go. As you can tell, I think there's some conflicting emotions going on.
Well, I think even more than George Graham, I think George Graham's a good parallel for some of the players that have left previously. I think with Aubameyang,
maybe a better parallel would be someone like Fergie at United, who, you know, would put up with players doing things that he wasn't totally happy with as long as they were really producing the goods. I mean, we saw the way that, say, with Beckham and Keane and one or two others, that, you know, he didn't seem remotely bothered about anything they did up until the moment that their form started to go, or he felt their head wasn't in the game anymore, you know, as much as it should be. And then he'd bin them off like that. you know, super loyal to the point, up until the point that he suddenly has no loyalty at all. And maybe Arteta, yeah. Maybe Arteta, without the same credit in the bank, is exhibiting some of the same ruthlessness, which, of course, is, you can get away with it in your Alex Ferguson, and you've managed to survive that tricky opening period and then go on a great run of success. But with Arteta, you don't have quite as much faith behind you from the supporter base, because we're all kind of like going, well, we still haven't seen enough to really know. We kind of can see a picture of what might be happening, and we think we like that, but, you know, is it wise to be quite so long-termist in the thinking when, you know, tomorrow and today are two different things? But equally, I suppose, if one wants to make the Ferguson comparison, one has to remember that Ferguson did sweet FA for 4 years at United, nearly got sacked, and was only saved by winning an FA Cup due to an unused kid coming off a bench against some lowly good opposition and spawning a jammy winner in injury time. So, you know, the margins as they are fine. I think you say, as you say, the conflicting emotions regarding the Aubameyang situation are really exhibited throughout the fan base. There's a lot of people who are kind of like, yeah, get, you know, good riddance. And there's equally a lot of people who are like, well, this is on Arteta. It's a massive fuck up. But the sort of overall balance is that, well, we'd kind of resigned ourselves to the fact it was going to happen. Even though it was only, you know, less than 2 months ago we were starting games for us, which seems mental. But I guess the sort of overwhelming majority opinion, if you balance them out, is, well, it's a bit shit the way it's happened, and it's hardly ideal for where it's left us. But at the same time, it may not be the worst thing, you know, given that there's a lot of wages that have departed, and Aubameyang, although having had his praises sung earlier in the season by Arteta, the last few times he played for us looked like he was a player either in decline physically or perhaps mentally in terms of his motivation. You know, he's come out and said today at his Barcelona unveiling, without laying it on too thick, that basically his only problem was with Arteta, and again continues to give the impression that he doesn't really know why things happened as the way they do. The way they did, rather. And I know that I think it was James Benge on the Arsenal Vision podcast was talking about, you know, what he's heard from Aubameyang's camp, if we want to use that phrase, is that they're kind of feeling that previous issues have been dealt with. And so, therefore, for this to be such a big thing, it has blindsided the player. And I know apparently Guendouzi's camp felt the same way, even though obviously Guendouzi didn't have nearly as much credit in the bank and was clearly a bit more of a dickhead. But you know, it raises an interesting question there, because is it that Arteta is not communicating effectively? Is it that Arteta just suddenly hits a point where he wants to bin people off overnight because he's pissed off with them? Or is it also is it that the fact that the players don't recognize that just because they've had their medicine for one indiscretion, that doesn't reset them back to zero? And should it reset them back to zero or should it not? And this is, you know, it's quite a nuanced thing. Obviously, we don't have the details. We don't know what exactly happened. We don't know if maybe Arteta said, look, you can't be captain anymore because this is like, you can't keep being late for shit. It's just a bad example. And maybe Aubameyang was like, well, fuck you, man. And then it all blew up. Or maybe it was just Arteta going, well, this is a guy who's on a shit ton of money, who's declining, who's breached discipline again. And isn't, so if he's not fucking used as a captain, then, you know, his value to us is not enough that he's getting paid, and has just made a very ruthless decision in that way. We don't know. And and we'll never fully know. But yeah, just that sort of set, just wanted to ask you, I mean, there's a few things there, but I want to ask you first, this idea of, the strikes being lined up, and can they be erased after an individual punishment, or should a culmination of things build up? And what's your view on that? Because that's a bit about sort of management in general, let alone in outside of a football context.
Yeah, so I am actually a line manager.
That's my after.
So hopefully no one that I manage is actually listening to this. But I've always tended to, I think, possibly to a fault, I'm as much as I used to complain about Arsene, I think I'm much more on the Arsene school of, you know, you give a player or a team member a chance, and if they're continually doing something that they shouldn't be, you have to try and find out why that is. And admittedly, I'm somewhere where it's a lot more difficult to just bin somebody off. You can't just...
No, not in the real world.
No. So, but the emphasis is very much on if somebody isn't performing, you have to try and find out why, you know, what's going on. It can get into what's going on at home. What, you know, there's all sorts of things that one of my very first management situations I had to deal with is possibly what, again, I don't want to say too much because I don't know who might be listening, but we ended up having to sack someone for something they did at work, and I'd been a line manager 3 months, and when I heard what had happened, I said to my line manager, I was like, what do I do? And he looked at me and goes, I don't know. We need to go to the hotel and find out. And it was just like, wow. And that's still 5 years later, that's still the worst thing that's ever happened to me in management. And having to deal with that early, I guess it set a bar for me. So I kind of think, you know, things have happened over the last few years. I think, it's bad. Is it as bad as that? With it. So very much more, and maybe Arteta did, we don't know, maybe Arteta did try and resolve it with him, and for whatever reason Aubameyang wasn't willing or wasn't able to. I mean, if it's very difficult to believe, I think, that Aubameyang is not an Arsenal player anymore just because he was late a few times. I just find that incredible. So I'm of the view that something else has happened, that something that we may never find out about. I mean, it's literally got to the point where Arteta has been down the spot site of Aubameyang, which is why Aubameyang's on the East Coast of Spain. For it to have got like that is like, and as you said a minute ago, so quickly. And the funny thing is actually, if we were having this conversation a month ago after Martinelli, Smith Rowe and Saka had been banging in goals left, right and centre, I think actually the Arsenal fan base would have probably been, I said it myself, I felt like Martinelli had ended Aubameyang's career almost before the problem had happened. So I think if we were having this conversation a month ago, we might all be shrugging about it a little bit, to be honest. It's just in the context of the month we have just had, where we haven't been able to score very many goals at all, it's a little bit more difficult to understand. But equally, I say that as someone that's always been very sympathetic to Uba. My friend Chris, who I've mentioned before many times, apparently he can stand the sight of him. I don't know why. But he couldn't, and I think we haven't talked about it too much because obviously it's another bone of contention. But I imagine he's quite pleased to see the back of him. For me, I just think it's a real shame that it couldn't be resolved. But I think there's actually an opportunity for Arsenal to try and maybe now, and this is probably why they've done it, to develop some of the kids that are around the fringes of the first team. And maybe try. I know Martinelli's been playing up front, up out in Dubai in their little training camp. So, I mean, it's potentially quite exciting, I think. I guess I'm more excited by that than the thought of watching Lacazette strolled around the centre circle for 90 minutes.
Or, bless him, Eddie struggling to... I mean, having said that, you know, lots of people have been commenting about Eddie Nketiah's goal. He's got no Premier League goals this season. It's like, well, he's played 50 minutes in the Premier League. So, you know, that'd be a pretty, even if he had one goal, that'd be an incredibly impressive conversion rate. Yeah, it's a question mark, isn't it, about how it's going to be going forward. I mean, certainly Martinelli as a striker would probably be a long-term plan. I know Arteta's had it in his mind, and this could accelerate that process. But whether he's able to perform that role now is very much a question mark, having not really done that significantly in his career. But I suppose, as you said before, the form that Aubameyang was showing after you know, he had a month of good form earlier in the season, but aside from that, most of his form for the last even 12 months when he's been playing hasn't been great. You know, he obviously has an athleticism and an instinct for getting in goal-scoring positions that Alex Lacazette simply doesn't have, but then he doesn't bring any of the things that Lacazette brings for the most part, except for on rare performances. So I guess part of the reason this is not quite the nuclear moment that it could be is because most Arsenal fans can see that Aubameyang was not performing at the level that we saw earlier in his Arsenal career. The age curve meant that was unlikely to improve significantly, even though his athleticism hadn't dropped off all that much. And that we need something else. Obviously, if people have been told that we wouldn't end up with anything else, perhaps have been a bit more circumspect, and perhaps even Arteta might have been less draconian had he known that there was going to be no one else coming in. In the end, the way things went, you know, there really wasn't much of a route back, and so therefore, what do you do in that situation? You have to just let the player go.
I was thinking about this yesterday, actually, and I don't know what you think about this, but to me, there's kind of a parallel with Thierry Henry and how his last year at the Arsenal went. Obviously, there was all the talk for months and months and months. Laguna did a campaign to get Thierry to sign a new contract, and of course, at the end of 2006, the season, we were left hanging a little bit as to what Thierry was going to do, and then we lose that final to Barcelona, and I think probably Thierry thought to himself, I can't go and play for this club now. He signed a new contract, but then he spent I went to a lot of games that season, and my memory of Thierry, perhaps unfairly, is that he spent a lot of time at the Emirates dropping around the pitch, looking miserable, wondering where all his mates have gone. You know, it was it was either 1-0 or 3-0 at the Emirates for quite a while into that first season there. And it felt like he stayed because he felt he had to, but then he kind of almost immediately regretted it. And I remember going to the Arsenal Spurs game that season where I think the Sun, maybe the morning of the game, had an article about Thierry storming out of training the day before, and he didn't play in that game. I don't think he was even on the bench, and we won 3-0. But it was kind of, in a way, that feels like that was really the beginning of the end for Thierry at Arsenal. And I think with Olga now, you can see where I'm going with this. Obviously, if Arsenal would let him go last summer, I don't care what anyone had said, if we'd let him go, people would have been like, oh, look at Arsenal, they can't hold on to this guy that's just won them the FA Cup. So they moved heaven and earth to keep him. Aubameyang, I think, could have got probably at least close to the same money somewhere else if he had gone. Chose to stay, and it hasn't worked out too well in the final analysis.
Yeah. I think one difference with Thierry is he had a number of injuries that season as well, which was...
Yeah.
So whatever frustration he was feeling about the club's lack of progress
perhaps, you know, would also have been magnified by the fact that he just was not able to perform at the level. And you know, as we've seen, if you're having to carry a team to a degree, it puts a much greater physical strain on you than if you can go and, as you know, he first went to Barcelona, he struggled a bit, but then when he got fully fit again, it was like, oh, this is a piece of piss because I'm in an amazing team full of amazing players and I can just basically turn up and be brilliant occasionally. That's all right. So, that, you know, they're, obviously, if this Arsenal team was still full of senior pros that were creating a lot of chances out of peak latter days of Wenger, then Aubameyang would still be scoring lots of goals and everything would be gravy. But, you know, this team is constructed in a different way now. Its youth means that there's going to be a fundamental degree of inconsistency in terms of performance levels. So that puts more on a senior player. And I think one thing that I'm surprised people haven't talked about really is, you know, quite apart from the lateness and the COVID protocols and all the rest of it, this is a player who's had malaria and COVID twice in the last year. And that has, to my mind, it has slightly affected his both performance levels and his confidence. And I suppose if the club feels that somehow his COVID experience is related due to a lack of care or a lack of professionalism, whether that's true, but if that's the club's perception, that puts a whole different, you know, balance on this at all, doesn't it? Because obviously we've seen this season that you know, a COVID outbreak can destroy a team for a period of time, and that not all players recover at the same speed. And indeed, there have been a small number of very unlucky players who haven't fully recovered at all in different leagues. And if they feel that someone isn't taking the requisite degree of care, then that's going to erode a lot of credit in the bank. Now, again, I don't know that that's the case, but I certainly remember when there was the COVID story before, and before the Brentford game, there was an implication that either Aubameyang or Lacazette or both hadn't been as careful as they might have been in terms of attending a social event that was not a wild social event. I think it was a kid's party or something, but still, ultimately, whatever the moment was, that outbreak, as it was, probably cost us points. And if the club feels that he's been not as careful as he might have done in that situation, and I guess the fact that the coming back from France after visiting his mum, there was an error with the COVID protocols, and yes, the protocols had changed, so it's a bit unfortunate for the player, but I guess you'd expect a senior pro with lots of advisors, a team around him, and the club captain to be on top of that shit. And for me, that's why I think that is probably a bigger element in that incident than actually the lateness. You know, I mean, having said that, if he did said he was going to come back a certain time and then didn't come back to the next day, you know, that's something that you really do need to sort in advance. And, you know, in any workplace where you're getting paid vast amounts of money, you're going to be held to very, very high standards, unless you're a politician, of course. You know, again, we're all relying on speculation. We don't have the exact information. We never will. But that's something, that's an angle I thought of that might actually be more serious, you know. Timekeeping has been an issue in Aubameyang's career at periods where he's slightly less focused. That's something that happens, and the club has known that and has dealt with that. That may have caused issue with the captaincy, but that shouldn't have been a nuclear moment. But if something with potentially bigger ramifications has occurred, then that obviously is something the club's going to take much more seriously. Both sides are doing their best not really to talk about it. Which I think is probably for the best. But I think ultimately the situation got getting to where it did. The club had to find a way out for him, because we all saw what happened when the club couldn't get rid of Mesut Ozil and he stunk around. You know, I mean, Aubameyang's not as I don't think as politically motivated and divisive as Ozil in terms of, you know, Ozil's very selective social media posts when he was still an employee of Arsenal Football Club was like, not a great look. I don't think Aubameyang's that sort of character. But then, you know, if you've got a highly paid, experienced player, you know, who's not playing, every time that there's a bad result, it's a story. And I guess having had that experience with Mesut Ozil, Arteta and the club are not prepared to have that experience again with another major senior player.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough, actually. I don't imagine we'll see too many trust the process tweets from him whenever Arsenal lose.
No.
One thing that I've also thought of is actually, I know last season, particularly the first half of it, was miserable for basically everyone that is connected to Arsenal, but he didn't cut a very contented figure. Almost from the minute he signed his contract, it went wrong. And I'm never going to come on here and say I think he signed his contract and mentally clocked off. I don't think that at all. I think it's just really unfortunate timing. But, you know, my mate Steve, who I've mentioned quite a lot in here, the amount of conversations I used to have with Steve was things like, oh, look at Aubameyang, he's your captain, and he looks miserable, and he's stroppy, and blah, blah, blah. And I, of course, you know, he's the captain of Arsenal, so I would defend him. But I do think, you know, there was clearly some truth in what Steve was saying. I mean, it was there for everyone to see. And unfortunately, a bit like Ian Wright and Thierry Henry, particularly Wrighty, I suppose, Aubameyang's a very expressive character. You know when he's feeling good and you know when he isn't.
Yeah.
Maybe there was a bit of that as well. I mean, if he was like that when he was playing games for Arsenal, what's happening on the training pitch? We don't know. I can only say really what I've already said, which is I'm just very sad that it's come to this. I think, you know, he was a brilliant player for us for 2.5 years, and it's just really, really sad that he's left the way he has, but at least it's been dignified on all sides as well.
Yeah. I mean, both, you know, have really to date turned down the opportunity to stick the boot in. You know, the club basically said essentially what they said is he's been late and he's been late a few times and that's it. And he's just gone, well, I was happy apart from with Arteta. So, okay. You know, nothing, not too much to see there, really. It doesn't add any fuel to the fire. You know, obviously it leaves plenty of room for speculation, but I think anything that either party would say would leave room for speculation in this particular set of circumstances. I mean, before we look at where we're at now, the other departures, I mean, you shedding a tear for the ghost of Callum Chambers or, you know, where are you with the rest of it?
I think it would have been a year ago, to be honest. It's kind of weird, isn't it? He played that game at Manchester City and we got humped and we didn't see him again until he scored against Leeds. Mm. And then we didn't see him. I think the main thing for me is my mate Luke, who again, I've cast characters that I mentioned frequently. Luke never thought Callum Chambers was good enough to play for Arsenal, and I think finally Callum Chambers maybe met an Arsenal manager that shared that opinion. Although I would say, in fairness to Callum, that he was playing really well and playing centre-back for us, and then he got a knee ligament injury, which appears to have ultimately done for him.
Yeah, that's the sliding doors moment for sure.
Yeah. I mean, to me, I'd kind of prefer to see him at centre-back than Rob Holding, but that's just me.
Depends on the type of game, I think. I think if it's like backs to the wall, you know, defending your own box, I think Rob Holding's a better bet. But I think a little bit more expensive. I think Chambers obviously offers a little bit more on the ball.
To your point, to go back to that Burnley game, I think one of the other things that really killed us was the fact that Rob Holding it was properly incapable of passing the ball into midfield on that day. Every time he got the ball, it was sideways.
It was the old pattern of when Hector Bellerin kept getting the ball in positions he didn't really want to have the ball. Thank you very much.
I personally quite liked him. I think he was decent. I think the fact that he only played, I think, 120 games for us in 8 years. It kind of tells you that it never really happened for him, did it? I'm sure he'll do well at Villa.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, although Villa are a club who are dangerously close to catching us up, I think ultimately the expectations at Villa are close to the level of his performance. As you say, the one time he appeared to be approaching a level of performance that was good enough for this club on a regular basis, he then did his ligaments and, you know, and by the time he came back, he wasn't quite playing with the same level of confidence. We know that those kind of injuries take a long time to come over, and ultimately the club went out and bought someone better in that position, which I suppose is the kind of thing that actually, if you remove emotion from it, we all want the club to do. And the player's contract was running out, you know. Ultimately, the club could have renewed that contract, but there's any point in renewing a contract for a player. You know, he's not going to accept a one-year contract renewal to sit on the bench for a year just to do us a favour. You know, ultimately, unless we were going to give him more game time or give him a shit ton of money, why the hell would he renew a contract? And so it was a case of, okay, well, let's, you know, it save the money on the wages, but also I think there's some clauses in there. So if he does certain things with Villa, then we get some money, basically. And I think that's fair enough. It's a player who has been an okay part of the squad, but apart from as a period of about 10 weeks, no one has ever been clamoured to be first choice. What it was surprising, I guess, is that towards the end of last season, he was doing very well at right back. But then, so that looked like, at least he'd be there as a squad position for us. But the start of this season did for him, because not only did he perform not very well, and Tomiyasu came in and basically goed, oh, he showed us all that's how the position can work. But I think it's, you know, Chambers started the season looking sluggish and looking like he wasn't really focused. And there were whispers, I have no idea if they're true or not, so I'm not going to give them too much credence, that he was carrying a little bit of extra timber after the mid-season break, after the off-season break. And ultimately, you know, if he'd started the season on fire, you know, playing as he did, say, against the West Ham in that game last season, then he might still have a place at the club. But basically, the only games he played this season, that he started this season, he was shite in, for want of a better way of putting it, and got absolutely destroyed in all of them. And so that was that, really. I mean, Maitland-Niles, we don't know if he'll ever come back from loan. It seems unlikely. But I guess apart from the timing of that loan deal, which we've already discussed on a previous episode, I don't think anyone's got a problem with him going on loan to Roma, really. We do wish that it probably could have happened 2 or 3 weeks later. But, I mean, do you have anything more to say about that?
No, I think even I can see the writings on the wall for his Arsenal career. But I think the other thing with getting rid of Chambers is actually, I think that what that means for William Saliba is potentially quite exciting. And I saw earlier today that Arsenal were actually now looking to draw up a new contract offer for Saliba, which, given that he hasn't played for us, where are we now? 3 years after? Two and a half years after he signed for us? They're obviously planning to bring him into the first team picture next season. And I'm just caught a little bit that Steffi Malvidi said about him. Having played against him, and he said he couldn't believe that someone like that is not in the Arsenal side at the moment. So that's really exciting, because I think potentially Saliba will give up. You're probably going to tell me I'm wrong, but I feel like he could possibly cover either of White or Gabriel.
I mean, that's my belief. I mean, he's obviously played most of his career well in White's position, but he has played for St Etienne a bit on the other side at certain points when he was there back with them on his loan spell from us, and when he first broke through. So there is that possibility for sure. Yeah, I mean, I think ultimately everyone knows that Chambers was not a long-term option. He was just here doing a job, did it well enough, seemed to be a decent pro. Everyone seemed to like him. It's one of those ones where, yeah, fair enough, mate, good luck to you. You weren't quite at the level for Arsenal Football Club, but you didn't ever disgrace yourself, you know, despite the odd ricket here and there. But basically, no one's got him any. He was never a player that drew particular antipathy, and it's the best. The timing may be, again, slightly curious, but I guess the end result is what we were anticipated happening at the end of the season anyway, so why not bring it forward? Saliba one is he did add a bit of a ricket for Lyon's winning goal last night, but Dembele absolutely did him. He got too tight and Dembele did him and then scored the winner in the last few minutes. But he has been very good for the most part for Marseille. Has to say, actually, Stiffy Mevedidi, formerly of this parish, has also been great in France this season. He was a player I liked before he went on a free to Juventus, when he didn't want to renew his contract. And I always thought that, to be honest, I thought he was a player who had a higher ceiling than Eddie Nketiah. Different sort of player. I'm quite pleased to see him doing well in France. Ainsley, as discussed, if only his ability to be focused for 90 minutes matched his combination of physical and technical attributes. But he's just always given a vibe of being like, I guess he's a player that you can only go so far in potential. Like, not to say he hasn't been good for us. He's been a real asset for Arsenal at times, and he's been good in important games. But he's never really kicked on, and whether that's down to the limited appearances or whether it's down to just a lack of his development for whatever reason, you know, you see a player now and you don't think he's better than the player you saw 4 years ago. And I guess whether that's the club's fault or his fault or some combination of the two, it's still better for him if he goes somewhere else, you know.
Yeah. I wonder if I was talking to someone at work yesterday, they're an Everton fan, about Alex Iwobi, who my friend Luke believes is the worst player he's ever seen play in an Everton shirt. And of course, being an Everton fan, he would have seen a few.
I was going to say that's a bit harsh from what I've seen.
But, you know, I was kind of talking about it because I remember, I think, you may even have shared in this, yeah, as a group on Daily Cannon, we were genuinely all very sad to see Iwobi go, and I felt that it might have been a mistake by Arsenal, but, you know, we've seen that getting £35 million for Iwobi from Everton was magnificent. So, in kids like Saka and Smith-Rowe that have come through, and Iwobi could complain. We know that. It won't be can play football. But Saka and Smith Rowe are properly special talents. And I think to relate that back to Ainsley, I guess we've never really seen it that he is that special. He's a very good footballer, but he's not special. Not like Saka is special, but not like Smith Rowe is.
Yeah. No, I think that's entirely fair. And I think, Alex Iwobi, I think the main reason we were questioning his departure is not that we thought he was, a genius, but just that the function he had as a player was one that we sort of questioned whether we'd miss. But ultimately we haven't really.
No.
I mean, who else is left? I mean, I'm not sure. I'm not sure there's going to be too many tears for Kolasinac, a player that started pretty well but then lost his way very, very badly, and certainly is more associated with negative performances in recent years than positive ones. Dejan Ilyev, the young goalkeeper, who was never, ever going to get a game for Arsenal. So no, most of the fans listening to this probably won't even know he existed. And then obviously loans, you know, Flo Balogun. I think that's probably, we might miss him a tiny bit in the short term, but essentially is is a very good move for him, I think. He has all the talent, but just has had no experience of senior football. And
it was quite just on Balogun. Again, Wright Eve was talking about him and saying how in that Brentford game that he started at the start of the season, it felt like Balogun was trying to do all the things that he's been doing at under 23, but just not having the time. You don't get the time in the way that you have time when your level's ahead of where you are. We all said it after that game. He clearly needed to go out on loan, and it's a bit of a shame that it's taken to this window for that to happen. But hopefully it'll
It looks like it could be a good loan move for him. I mean, he set up a winning goal in his second game for Middlesbrough, which is obviously a very good thing. So what we'll do is we'll wish him well and hope that he's able to, whether it be a second, third or third choice striker next season, he's able to come in and be better prepared to contribute to the first team with that senior experience. Lest we not forget the not so missed Pablo Mari has gone on loan to Udinese as well. I guess that's the club's way of trying to find a buyer for him in the longer term. A punt that hasn't really worked, I think we'd say about Pablo Mari.
Yeah. 100%.
He's not a terrible player at all. He's just not quite at the level. And was a low risk backup signing that has turned out to be a backup player. And at least if he gets some football at Udinese, it might make it easier to get a fee for him in the summer. Of course, I have been slightly unfair at the start of this podcast. It is that we have actually made a signing.
Oh, the goalkeeper.
Well, no, the Matt Turner signing hasn't technically happened yet. Austin Trusty.
Oh.
Who has cost us the sum of £1.5 million from Colorado Rapids. I wonder how they knew about him. So he's basically cost us Lucas Torreira's loan fee, for what it's worth. I don't expect you to have a huge amount of knowledge about the player, but is there any thoughts before I say my piece?
I think I read a little bit about him on The Grove yesterday or the day before. Apparently he's quite a powerful athlete, capable of bringing the ball out of defence. That's all I've got for you, to be honest. And I'm just parroting what I've read somewhere else anyway.
It's an interesting one because we're being told conflicting things. One of the reports was saying it was to basically facilitate to a move to him in Europe, but he's gone back on loan to them for the rest of the season. Left-footed centre-half, very left-footed. I mean, not quite Nigel Winterburn, but let's just say he's not as comfy attempting to use his right a little bit as Gabriel is. He's a bit... He's not the most agile in that respect with the ball at his feet, but big, strong, decent pace, good long passer, particularly playing the ball down the flanks, over the opposition fullbacks and what have you. Likes a bit of physicality. Perhaps could do with a smaller turning circle. He's got a little bit of the Sylvain Viltord turning circle. A player that, if he develops, could be a fourth choice centre half for Arsenal. But he's not got the technical comfort with the ball at his feet under pressure, which I think would see him play many games for Arsenal, just because he is very, very one-footed. But he's, he's got an excellent physical profile, and he has clearly taken a step forward for Colorado this season, by all accounts, and also by the statistical measures. And has cemented himself as one of the better centre halves in the NMLS this season, having previously been nearer the lower end, it reaches that list. So who knows? Maybe there's something they've seen in the player. It does seem like it's more of a strategic thing. You know, they've been sending Colorado players on trial to Arsenal, like in their droves over the last year or so. And I think he's the best of the bunch. So whether this is just, whether there's actually a football reason for it, whether it's just this is part of the KAC, let's join things up master plan, we shall wait and see. But I would temper expectations, but without completely dismissing the player.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, let's just say I'd be surprised if he plays for us in the Premier League in without there being a major injury crisis, but he's good enough to do jobs in, you know, League Cup, Lower League, FA Cup at this stage. That's what I'd say. You know, if we end up in the Europa League, it could probably do all right there, that sort of thing. But, you know, super low risk. I mean, £1.5 million for a player who at least have the physical attributes to contribute at the level that we're playing at. Worth a punt, even beyond the strategic linkages, I'd suggest. But you did also allude to the not concluded but impending arrival of Matt Turner in the summer as presumably our backup goalkeeper. Do you know much about him before I start talking again?
No, I do not. Carry on.
Okay. Well, I'm not going to pretend I know a huge amount of the player. I mean, I know that he was undrafted, which... obviously, American sports have a draft system, but basically it meant that when he was coming out of education, a college or whatever it was, basically no one thought he was very good or good enough to invest any future resources into. Having said that, he then played at lower levels and worked his way up, and has really worked his way up to the point where he has been the best goalkeeper in the MLS, certainly this last season and possibly the season before, or certainly joint best goalkeeper with Zach Steffen, who has gone to Man City and is currently their reserve goalkeeper. He's great reactions, good size, a good shot stopper, not great with the ball at his feet. He's not as agile or as springy as someone like Bernd Leno, but he's a big guy with good positioning, who does have a great reaction speed and is in the MLS, at least, has a very good penalty saving record. Although whether that's anything to be valued, we don't know because we don't know how that will translate. But for me, it's a very sensible signing for the Arsenal. You know, he's a goalkeeper that apparently is an Arsenal fan as well, or at least has long had an affection for the club. So that's always good. Little growth in the US market isn't a bad thing. Getting the best player out of an inferior league, it seems like a sensible way forward in terms of approaching signings. And, you know, Bernd Leno is a little too good to be a backup goalkeeper, in all fairness. And it shouldn't be a position where we're piling that amount of resources in. Again, Turner will come in on much lower wages than Leno. Probably won't be as polished a goalkeeper, not quite as good, but he has merits that make him, you know, he's certainly no dud by any stretch of the imagination. He's sort of had the seniority in the US number one slot for the national team, which is no longer as much of a joke as it used to be. So alternating with City's reserve goalkeeper, Zach Steffen. So it seems to me like a sensible piece of business. Good to know who's going to be coming in to replace Bernd Leno when he inevitably leaves in the summer. So I think that's one thing we can say the club have done well, but of course it doesn't really affect anything at present. I mean, I suppose the only thing to talk about very briefly before we go is the squad. Where do you see things are at, and how do you see this impacting on the race for 4th/5th/6th?
As I kind of said right at the top, I kind of feel like we maybe have gone a little bit too far with this. I think if Lacazette gets injured, Nketiah really hasn't shown enough to say to anyone that he can carry the burden for us. I mentioned Martinelli earlier. Again, we've not really seen him play centre forwards for Arsenal, so we don't know. He could be really exciting there. It might not be. I think the last time I spoke to you, we were worried about depth in central midfield. think obviously now with Partey's suspensions over, Xhaka will be back from suspension for a bit anyway, and then he'll probably get suspended again. I think we're basically okay, but I also feel that centre forward and central midfield are massively important positions within the team, and I'm struggling to see where in tight games and it's 0-0 and there's 5 minutes left, who's going to pop up and stick the loose ball away. I was quite optimistic about top four 2 months ago. I don't feel as optimistic now, and as I've kind of mentioned, I feel that if Arsenal were to somehow let European football slip through their fingers this season, this summer might be quite ugly. But who knows? I mean, you know, ultimately Arteta now, we know we've got 17 games left in the season. We know the players we've got to work with. We know the players that we've got are largely ones that Arteta wants to keep. So I think it could happen. I'm not going to sit here and say that I don't think we will, but I'm a lot less optimistic than I was.
Fair enough. Yeah, I mean, the way I look at it is the club's taken a big risk. It seems to have placed a greater priority on perhaps the long-term intention to sort out the wage bill, which had obviously spiralled. And as Josh Kroenke had said before, that we were a Europa League club on Champions League wages. Well, now we're not even a Europa League club. Although the wage bill has improved. He's clearly going to be part of the club strategy to go young and hungry. And the pursuit of Vlahovic suggests that they're certainly prepared to spend the money for the right player. And you know, there's a lot of people calling for the signing of Alexander Isak at the end of the transfer window, but that would have been the ultimate panic buy, because much as Isak is a player that has a lot of really attractive qualities, he's the guy who scored 4 goals this season.
Mm.
Despite the fact he you know, yes, he's had a few niggles, but he plays most of the games. And what would have worked out as essentially somewhere between, depending who you believe, between 65 and 75 million pounds on a striker that doesn't really score goals, doesn't really solve our problem.
No, absolutely.
And looking at who's available and the prices they would have commanded at this transfer window, you know, the Vlahovic was the option because he had the contract running down and Fiorentina wanted to sell him to avoid his contract running down. And that made sense to go big on that one, because you could get him for probably less than his perceived mark, or around his perceived market value. But everyone else, you'd be paying significantly over the odds. There weren't, you know, unless there's some scouted players that we're not familiar with, even some of the players we weren't that interested in weren't going to be leaving their clubs or anything other than massively inflated fees at this stage. And I think as a club, we've made too many errors in terms of buying players that we don't really want in the last few seasons. And, you know, I think for the club to avoid that, it was very sensible. Now, of course, it is a huge risk. Is it worth buying £40 million on a stopgap player if that £40 million player gets you into the Champions League and therefore wins you £40 million worth of prize money? That's a hard one to call, but ultimately a signing isn't, you know, a signing's for a contract, not just for Christmas. It's probably best to be circumspect, even if this year's a opportunity, than we might have next year.
I think that's a really good line. And I think actually, you know, Arsenal have forgotten that at times over the last few years. And as I said earlier, I think that is part of the reason why we are where we are now. And, you know, I find it a little bit frustrating that 2 years after Ralf and there, he said Arsenal had to be better about selling players and, you know, making sure we got value for them when they left the club or words to that effect. Here we are letting players terminate contracts and walk out for nominal fees. And I really, really hope this is ultimately, you know, if we can sell players for good money, then we have more money to spend. So we'll be in a better position. And I really hope that's the next thing that we get a grip of, is actually selling players at the right time, because it's something that, going back for years and years and years and years and years, we've not done properly.
Yeah, I mean, that's been, as we've discussed plenty of times, that's been the curse of the last decade that has done so much to set this club back. Is there's, you know, at least £250 million worth of transfers have ended up leaving the club for nothing or next to nothing in the last 6 or 7 years. And obviously that is not a sustainable method to giving your club long-term success. And it is something that has to be a strategic priority to change. But I guess the difficulty is the players that left, you know, who is going to give you much money for them? And which you know, points to problems else, you know, to do with recruitment or knowing when to let players go. I mean, Aubameyang was a great player. Clearly, is not quite the player he was. He was on gargantuan wages. You know, you're never going to get much of a transfer.
I mean, I know the Aubameyang thing is, I guess, smart people than me maybe saw something like this coming when he signed the contract. But he's not an exception to what's been happening more generally, though, is he?
No. But it's also a thing, you know, if as a club you have players that you don't really want, and everyone else knows you don't really want, because essentially they're not good enough, Why the hell would they spend significant amount of money buying them from you? You know, I think the much bigger issue has been what happened maybe 4 or 5 years ago, or 3 or 4 years ago, with the, you know, the likes of the letting Ramsey run down his contract, you know, trying to make Wilshere work despite the fact he was clearly cropped, the whole Alexis thing. You know, those are the bigger sins, because those are players that could have got significant amount of juice for, and Alexis being the biggest of them. I mean, obviously.
Well, you don't think Henrik Mkhitaryan was a bargain? What's wrong with you?
Well, Mkhitaryan was not a bad player, but he was not Alexis Sanchez at his peak, and unfortunately,
he certainly wasn't.
Unfortunately, that came from Wenger's enduring faith that if given long enough, he could always convince any player to sign a new contract, which increasingly became less and less true.
Have you watched that documentary yet?
I have not. I have not had time.
Please go and watch it. It's so good.
So yeah, I mean, I think you know, the last thing to say about this, because I know that you have to go, and it's probably been rambling too long anyway between the two of us. But you know, this is the last. Hopefully, this is the last transfer window where we're still really dealing with legacy issues. You know, we're still dealing. Yeah. I mean, yes, Aubameyang got the new contract under Arteta, so that's under his watch. But most of the other issues have, and the ones that will be, you know, the players will be departing this summer, they're the people that, you know, they've been around for a while. And as you said before about Callum Chambers, if you've been here for 8 years and you haven't really made a big splash, then it's time to go. Elneny, you know, you've been a decent guy to have around, but we all know, you know, fourth choice centre midfield is your ceiling at a club like Arsenal, so it's time to go. You know, and Lacazette will likely go in the summer, Eddie Nketiah will likely go in the summer. And although that leaves us with a strategic issue up front, and we'll probably have to spend a lot of money, ultimately at a club of our size, you can't just keep retaining players who aren't quite good enough, which is what we've repeatedly done in recent years, which has effectively cost us the ability to sign players that are good enough, or indeed renew the contracts of those players who are good enough and the wages they would want. And we have to accept the reality of the situation we're in. You know, we needed to trim the wage bill. We started doing that. Players leaving the summer. I mean, Lacazette's on nearly 200 grand a week. Good player, not worth that.
you know, Aubameyang we had to give away or even perhaps pay a little bit to go away because he was on such huge rages, say with Mesut Ozil. So, but the same with the squad players. I mean, Eddie Nketiah turned down a chance to get first choice football at Crystal Palace because he's paid too much to play fuck all at Arsenal. And, you know, these are all long-term issues. None of these are from new contracts, apart from the Aubameyang one. Certainly what the signings the club has made in the summer gone and the people we've been linked to are players who should theoretically increase in value from a relatively low wage starting point. And that has to be our strategy going forward. But I mean, I don't really have anything else to say about any of the things we're talking about. So do you have anything you want to say about the transfer window and where we're at now before we wrap up?
No, I feel like we've probably covered it all, haven't we?
I think so too.
Yeah.
Okay then, well, listeners, this has been a little bit of a rambly one, but that's partly because of the nature of the issues involved, sort of being interlinked and also not particularly cut and dry. It's obviously a lot easier to be specific when talking about individual games, but with issues with players departing, where you're not quite sure the stories behind them or how they link it to other things, it's a little harder to nail your colours quite so strongly to the mast. But of course, this time next week, we'll be playing Wolverhampton Wanderers. We'll actually have a game, heavenly.
Yeah.
Which would be significant, and we'll obviously talk about that. We'll have a look at that ahead of time at the start of next week. It's an away fixture against a team that's playing pretty good football at the moment, so it will be a challenge. But hopefully by then we'll have a bit more team news. We'll know a bit more about who's going to be fully fit, etc., 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 and that will give us a much better position to. Make some sort of predictions and look forward to things in a tactical sense, which we will do. But thank you for getting this far. If you have, always a pleasure to know that somebody out there is listening to us witter on. Thank you, Paul, for giving me someone to witter on with.
Thank you for having me.
And we wish you all a splendid week. Hopefully things will be well for all of you, wherever you are. And you never know, we might even have some more revelations about yet another Downing Street party to keep us entertained in the meantime. Anyway, if you are having
any... How dare you? Leave him alone. He's doing his best.
Doing his best to do what exactly?
Well, that is the question, isn't it?
Going off topic, but there's nothing quite like seeing the statesman's like visage of him striding across a Ukrainian or Russian airport tarmac. Yes, anyway, we won't go any further into that one, listeners.
Don't alienate anyone.
Not so much that, it's just this, we've been banging on long enough already, and that could take us on to another week. Okay, thank you all for getting this far if you have, and have a wonderful week, everyone. Cheerio.
Bye.